And now, Chuck and Winkler, two townies talking Wisconsin sports, covering nothing but your favorite teams. Live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios, this is Chuck and Winkler on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. Don't listen for our Packer coverage. Don't listen for our Bucks preview. Listen for what song I might play in an hour with Chuck Freeman. Hey, definitely listen, though, for the next 10 minutes or so. We're breaking down the Bucks with Matt Velasquez of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us every Wednesday at 8. Bucks now head on the road. I believe it's 21 of their next 30 or 31 games they've got away from Pfizer Forum. So they've had a lot of good home cooking. They've played very well at home. Now they got to do it on the road, and a big one tonight, national TV against the Houston Rockets. Matt Velasquez joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Matt, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Matt.
Good morning, guys. I'm just hanging out in Houston.
Well, did you tell your wife that you probably not see her to March now?
Yeah, no, I told her. I was like, you know what? This six-game homestand was great. We had to spend a lot of time together. You know, she and the kids came with me to on the trip to Boston and New York, and I'm like, yeah, now I'll see you in, like, March.
Yeah, no kidding. I just feel like the Bucks have played, like, 80% of their games at home so far. It's like they go on these six or seven home games. Like, most of their games have been on home. They've hardly played any road games this year.
Well, I think they were about even. I think it was, like, 17 home, 16 road or something like that before this six-game homestand. So it's kind of – I have to check the numbers again, but it's not as – crazy of a difference as you'd think it was. So I think they're plus seven in terms of home games right now, if my memory serves. But now they're about to play 13 of 18 on the road just before the All-Star break. So, we're gonna have a heavy dose of the Bucks on the road.
One thing we do know, one stat that is for sure, is that when they lose, they've come back and won that next game 11 out of 11 times. What makes this team so good in those situations? Is that a Budenholzer thing that he's instilling in them? Is that the players just, they hate losing? What if you could pinpoint one reason as to why the Bucks are able to not lose back-to-back games, what would you point to?
You know, I think I would point to the players. I think I'd point specifically to Giannis. I think that's kind of part of his mentality. And obviously, you know, all those guys in that team are competitive. But it goes back to the first time they lost in Portland. Or no, I said it was Boston was the first time they lost. But there's a game they lost in Portland to start their West Coast trip. And right afterwards, like, they're like, oh, man, like, no, we can't. I think it was Brook Lopez at a random high school gym in L.A. Like, no, we can't let this continue. Like, we have to turn this around. How do you say that after just one loss? Like, you know, and multiple guys have said it. Multiple guys have expressed that sentiment that they can't lose two in a row. That's just not how they want to play. They know that they're better than that. Every time they lose, they say, well, it's a game we should have won. Like, basically, without fail. They're just convinced they're that good. They're convinced they're a great team. And that's really the mentality you want, because that's something that we haven't heard from players in the past. You know, guys who have been here, you know, are saying things like that now, whereas in the past, they'd be like, oh, you know, we'll get it together. You know, these things happen in a season. It's like, no, these things don't happen anymore. They don't want them to happen anymore. And it's just a, you know, something that's really impressive.
You know, they could talk, and last year they put some high expectations of winning 50 games, and we all know they failed in that area. But, you know, beat around these guys during training camp and all that, they couldn't very well have thought that they would be in this position where they are right now as having the best record in the Eastern Conference. I mean, might have said it, but they couldn't have really felt that way, that they were going to be one of the best teams. Nobody had them at this point being where they are.
I mean, it's possible they did think that. The thing is that they were all really good about not saying anything concrete. They all said, like, hey, we think we're going to be really good. We're not going to put any numbers on them. We're not going to put any expectations. You know, Chris Middleton famously said, hey, we've said that before, and we've had to eat our words. Like, you know, we look stupid for saying that we're going to be this and be that. You know, this year we don't want to really – we're not going to say anything because we're just going to do our work. We know what we're capable of. But we're not going to just, you know, talk. We want to actually do it. And that's a change in kind of philosophy and mentality for this team this year. Though they, like I said, they've consistently said, we think we're really good and we deserve to be here.
Talking with Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel here. Chuck and Winkler on the Fan. Bucks have the Rockets tonight. We'll have the postgame show for you. Matt's a big part of that as well. We'll have that for you right around 9:30 or whenever the game ends. Sparky in tonight for that. Every time that the Bucks play, we've got a postgame show. And no postponements or nothing this year. We've always got it for you. So tune in after each and every game here all season long. We had a spirited conversation that the show did after they lost to the Raptors. They've lost so few times that I got to go back to find one, but this Raptors loss, that was a big game. 123-116 was the final. The Bucks have beaten the Raptors twice, yes, but I still think that that's a team that in the playoffs would give the Bucks the most trouble. DJ Wilson gets hurt in that one. Thonmaker does not play. Do you view Toronto as their toughest competition with what you've seen from some of these other Eastern Conference opponents so far, or is it too early for that?
I think Toronto would probably have the edge, in my opinion, just because of the versatile players that they have. You know, having a guy like Kawhi Leonard, who's just such a dominant two-way player, having a guy like Siakam, who obviously Giannis is going to get his, but Siakam can hold his own, and just the depth of talent that they have and just waves of guys coming at you. I think that Boston could, if they can play to their potential, play to their talent, could be another really tough test, but they haven't shown that consistently enough yet for me to say that they're more of a challenge than Toronto. I think, Philly has those three really high-end talents, but I don't think the Bucks would necessarily be afraid of the rest of their roster as much as the other two. And, of course, you can't forget Indiana. Indiana's playing great. They embarrassed the Bucks down in Indianapolis the last time they played. Their defense has been incredible. Thad Young was just great in defending Giannis, one of Giannis' worst games this season. And, they definitely have a blueprint for just locking the Bucks down. So, I mean, there's a lot of challenging teams. Those top five in the East, including the Bucks, are really, really pretty close and really tough. And it's going to be, a war to try and figure out who stays out of that 4-5 spot. Because you don't want to be in that 4-5 spot in the first round of the playoffs. So as long as the Bucks can stay 1-3, I think they can beat any of the 6-8 teams. But you don't want to be 4-5.
Thonmaker, 15 points the other night. DNP did not play against Toronto in the previous game. And I think this is what we come to learn from Thon, but just been real inconsistent. But, man, he got some minutes the other night, took advantage of his playing time, and I thought he was great on both ends of the court.
Well, absolutely. He was fantastic. He was getting the crowd going, getting his teammates going, scrapping, doing the little things, making open shots. Just really a great game from him. And I think the thing about the Toronto game, I think it says more about Bud than it does about Thon. Bud has consistently said that, or has consistently gone with the 10-man lineup, and he's even actually said in the past that, like, his philosophy is kind of to pick your guys before the game and go with them, barring something crazy happening. And so DJ gets hurt. He had obviously been in that 10-man rotation that had played, and he doesn't bring Thon at any point. And maybe that'd be different if the Bucks weren't losing in the second half and didn't need to ride Giannis as much and all those other things. But he just stuck with the rotation that he had. It's something that Bud does. He's the kind of guy who sticks to his guns. He sticks with his scheme. He sticks with his rotation. He sticks with what he's doing. Maybe that changes later in the season or in the playoffs, something like that. But that was his decision for that night. And maybe if Thon had gone in, things would have been the same. Maybe they would have been different. But, we'll see what kind of opportunities he gets later. But when he did play against the Jazz, he stepped up in a really huge way when his team needed him, with Giannis even saying that he didn't think they would have won that game without him.
Do you think, Matt, that if Giannis just plays consistently how he's been playing the rest of the season, he'll win the MVP? I know this is a broad scheme question, but there's other guys that are coming up and putting themselves, forcing themselves back into that conversation, James Harden being one of them. Bucks play the Rockets tonight. I'm as intrigued as I am to watch the game. I'm intrigued to watch how Giannis does against Harden at Houston against the Rockets, because I think if it's close, you could look back to, well, how did these guys play against each other? I think this could tilt either way, Harden or Giannis, come that MVP debate, maybe April or May.
Yeah, that's possible. I think to answer your question, if Giannis plays consistently the way he's been playing, I don't think it'll matter if Harden continues consistently playing the way he's been playing, because he's been just otherworldly. I mean, makes sort of like almost 40 points a game, 10 straight games of 35 points, you know, also dishing out a ton of assists, like almost 10 a game, shooting 30% from three or 40% from three. He's been fantastic. If he keeps doing what he's doing, he's going to pass Giannis in the MVP projections and eventually win it, because it seems unsustainable. But if he does sustain, I mean, it seems unsustainable for 10 or 12 or 14 games, but he's sustained it for that. But overall, I mean, if Harden does cool off and Giannis consistently stays at where he is, then I think he'll have a really strong case. I think right now a lot of people would consider him the favorite. And a game like tonight where they are going head-to-head, and granted, they probably won't defend each other and go actually at each other a lot in this game. But just being on that same stage, being on national television, just what they're able to do individually and who's able to win. You know, Giannis made the point the other day, hey, I'm not really worried about the MVP. I just care about winning. All I care about is winning, and everything else will take care of itself. And so, you know, if they can win this game on the road in Houston, it's a really hot team against the highest player in the NBA, you know, that'll be a mark in his favor for sure.
Matt, appreciate it. We'll check in with you next week. We'll listen for you on the post-game show. Until then, follow you on Twitter and find your work, jsonline.com. We will talk soon.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, talk to you guys next week.
Matt Velasquez joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Start your renovation journey with a simple and convenient pre-approval from Great Midwest Bank, dedicated to providing perfectly personalized home loans to those right here in our community since 1935. The Bucks on the road for quite a bit. We talked about how it affected the Packers last season. There's one team that's got it so bad, they don't play a home game for 3 months. I want to bring that to your attention coming up. We'll do that momentarily. Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan.
All right, the Q Club of Wisconsin is a place to watch all your favorite sports action this winter. Get in there, watch the games. They got the volume of the games on. They got great food at the Q Club, the awesome burgers, the wings, the appetizers, and, of course, the award-winning fish fries, both on Wednesday and Friday nights. When you go to a sports bar, you want to be able to watch the game, hear the volume of the game, and, of course, have some good food. And they got it all at the Q Club of Wisconsin. The Friday night fish fries are great, man. And the fish fries are so good. They have them on Friday nights. They have them on Wednesday nights. Your choice of four different styles piled high with all the extras. They got a huge entertainment room with the pool tables, tornado foosball, shuffleboard, electronic darts, ping pong, all that in one room at the Q Club of Wisconsin on Waukesha's Great North Side. Well, if you haven't really planned that company party yet, and you're thinking, man, what am I going to do for my employees, this little get-together I'm supposed to have before Christmas? Hey, you still got time to do that. Don't worry about that. Q Club can take care of that for you. They got the private rooms available. Plus, they got the VIP suite with the luxury pool table you want to take a hold of there at the Q Club. So if you want your company party, go to the Q Club. They'll make all the arrangements for you. And as far as live entertainment, Q Club has got that on weekends, Fridays and Saturday nights. If going out and seeing a band is your thing, they got all the good bands coming to the Q Club. Check out their Facebook page, and that'll tell you everything you need to know what's coming up to the Q Club of Wisconsin in Waukesha. Good food, sports on all the TVs, and, of course, the huge entertainment room, bands on weekends. Where is this? The Q Club of Wisconsin, 2454 North Grandview Boulevard, just a half mile south of I-94 in Waukesha. That's Highway T. Go 94 westbound, get off on T, and there it is. About a half mile in, you're going to see the Q Club of Wisconsin. Get in and enjoy a great afternoon or evening at the Q Club of Wisconsin. Visit them online, qclubofwi.com, or on Facebook.
Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That is Chuck Freeman. We'll talk to Rob Reichel, Forbes.com, Bob McGinn, Football.com, just after 8:30. His take on the whole situation with Matt LaFleur, and then what the Packers' biggest need is now that they've found a coach. We'll bounce that off with you guys in the 9 o'clock hour. Ask Chuck and Winkler Anything is also this hour. Tweet in your questions at 105.7 FM. The Fan, use the hashtag AskCW.
We've got Dane Cook tickets to give away. Dane Cook coming to the Riverside Theater on the 4th of May. So we've got some tickets for you. Use the hashtag AskCW and tweet us at 105.7 FM. The Fan. We were talking a little bit about the Bucks with Matt Velasquez and their road schedule. Is it 21-30 or 21-31?
Something like that.
Paschke said 21-31 on the broadcast. I thought I've seen 21-30.
I know it's for sure 13-18.
I don't feel like counting up to 31, so I'm not gonna as I look at the schedule here. But they are on the road quite a bit. At Houston, at Washington, at Atlanta, home for a night, at Memphis, at Orlando, home for two nights, and then three more games in January. On the road, is that going to trip them up? We talked about how it tripped up the Packers 4-5 on the road, having to go coast to coast. I think it's a little different in basketball, and the schedule does get a little easier. Houston's tough tonight. Washington on the road, I mean, they're no good. Walls up for the year. Atlanta ain't any good either. They play them Sunday in a matinee. Are you as worried about the road for the Bucks as you were with Green Bay? Or it's
no.
Different? It's
well,
different.
I think it's tougher to win on the road in basketball than it is in any sport. I think the winning on the road, college or pro.
Even when these teams suck?
Yeah, because you just never know. I mean, you never know. I was watching Phoenix and Oklahoma City the other night, about a week ago, and Oklahoma City was having their fits with Phoenix, and then OKC eventually pulled away. But, I mean, even Minnesota last night. Minnesota's a bad team. They went to Oklahoma City and won the game. So you see that happen. You know, you can see that happen. You see bad teams. I know last night, like Golden State throttled the New York Knicks. But going on the road is always tough in the NBA. You know, playing on their rims, playing in their court against their fans, whatever fans they have there. Like tonight. Tonight playing in Houston, that's not going to be easy. Home court advantage in the NBA or college basketball is the biggest in any sport.
There's some schedule losses that I'd say the Bucks have had already this season, like in November when they beat Golden State on that Thursday and then had to play a matinee in the Staples Center, or mm-hmm. Staples Center against the Clippers. That's hard. And then the next night they had to play at Denver. Now, they did win that one, so they were able to avoid that, but they lost that Clippers game when they went from Boston to Miami in back-to-back nights. And then back up to New York at the end of December. That's kind of a schedule loss there. Sometimes the travel, it's not that you're playing on the road, it's the travel or where you played the night before that'll get you.
Losing that game against the New York Knicks on the road, where Giannis got stepped on back in early December, I want to say. That was, the Knicks are a bad team. So, yeah, I don't take any NBA game for granted. I don't. Especially on the road. Still got to go out there. But I think winning on the road really tests your mental toughness for college and pro teams. You go on the road in the NBA or in the college game, and you win a road game because you're going against their fans as well and the court and all that. That says a lot about you.
Check out this. So Major League Soccer, this will be real brief. Every time I bring up soccer, it's very, very brief. But it's always relevant to the conversation. That is my pledge and my promise to you, Chuck. And to everyone listening, when I bring up soccer, I'll be apologizing more for bringing it up than I will actually to discuss what I'm bringing up. The Portland Timbers, they are renovating their stadium. So they have their first 12 games on the road. They don't play a home game in March, April, or May. The schedule was just announced this week. They do have 11-12 to finish the season at home. But you start the season 12 games in a row on the road. I don't know if that flies in other sports where you have that many games on the road. The Cubs, for that one year, they were renovating Wrigley. They thought, oh, are you going to play in Milwaukee? They ended up figuring it out, and they played in Chicago. I don't see this flying in any other sports.
No, I mean, college basketball, like a school like Presbyterian in college basketball, they'll go on the road for like 12 or 13 straight games.
Oh,
To collect paychecks. Like they'll play Duke, they'll play Marquette, and they'll do one of those things. Sometimes colleges will do that. They've been known to do that. They just go on the road and start playing games. But on the professional level, you never see that.
Although, do you? Because Oakland doesn't have a home next year, so the Raiders don't have a home. So that, you know, when I think of, sometimes I think there's things that happen in soccer that are never fly in other sports. But you have an NFL team right now that doesn't know where they're going to play next year. The San Antonio Spurs, sometimes, I think once a year, I think they still do this, they have a long road trip because of the rodeo. Don't they always go on that rodeo trip where they play away from home for like 2 weeks?
Yeah, and the Bulls do this early in the season too. They got this, it's called the circus trip, where they have the circus that comes in the United Center there, and the Bulls have got to be away for like six games. So they'll go out to the West Coast or wherever, but it's always called the circus trip.
So sometimes that will happen, but to not play at home for 3 months is ridiculous. And thus concludes my soccer analogy for the show. It wasn't as painful, I think, as many thought it might.
Well, the Bucks used to have this Holiday and Ice thing where they'd have Holiday and Ice at the old arena, and the Bucks would have to go on the road for a week.
Well, that's part of why they wanted a new arena, to control their dates.
Yeah.
And they can do that now. Did you see the Bradley Center? They're going to implode a little bit of that on Sunday.
I saw that. The roof is coming down. The roof is coming down. And when is the whole thing? I'm trying to find out when the whole thing is coming down.
I don't know.
Because it's so close to Fiserv Forum. I mean, if you look, there's not much space between the two.
If they imploded the Bradley Center and it went wrong and it ended up damaging the Fiserv Forum, well, would that not be the most Bucks thing of all time?
Especially that wood up there. I'm thinking, don't they have to? They just can't put a bomb to it and just explode the thing. They have to knock it down with a bulldozer, don't they?
I don't know. Or a wrecking ball? They're imploding it, yeah.
But, I thought the thing would be down by now.
That'd be the most Bucks thing ever.
Oh, you're booing my family.
Yeah.
Wow.
Except when fans booed Peter Fagan's family at the block party.
I'm thinking those things that have gone wrong for the Bucks for 30 years, where when the Bucks plan something, it usually doesn't work out too well. I think that's starting to turn a little bit.
No, don't say it.
I think it's starting to turn a little bit.
You don't say it.
No, I think it is. It's starting to, you know, then watch, they'll blow this thing up. It's your fault if that happens. That wooden roof will start,
You'll take the blame if it happens.
Well, I have that much power on it, like I always say. But no. The Bucks have had, I feel like some of their luck for both of our teams here in the city, but especially the Bucks, I think it's turning a little bit.
I was thinking it. I'd never say it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Boy, this going to the Fiserv Forum, man, is really, really – they did such a good job building that thing. I really don't have any complaints about it. Just walking around there and, all the food and, plus you got a great basketball team in there. But I just think that it's everything I hoped it was going to be. A terrific destination. I like that panoramic club up there.
Is that where you watch the game
on
Saturday?
Yeah, I was up there for a little bit watching. It's first come, first serve for those seats up there, which I could see could cause a problem if you leave your seat.
Yep.
And you got your shirt on it or whatever, or if you got a jacket on it, I could see where that might cause an issue with somebody.
Yeah, you can't be saving seats.
Yeah. But then, so if you leave.
Serve, church, wherever, saving seats. No, get there on time.
So, but if you save us, because I saw some seats up there that were tilted, like they were saved. But what happens?
Garbage.
So, if you have a seat at halftime, you can't get up and go to the bathroom. You have to.
You can save one seat.
You can have one
seat. For someone who is coming back immediately.
Okay.
You can't get there at 5 and then save 3 seats for your buddies that ain't going to show up till 10.
But if you have the seat for the first half, you should be able to come back to that seat and sit down. But you probably got to mark it.
Yeah, that I'll agree to. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins. Rob Reichel joins us momentarily. We'll talk Packers, Matt LaFleur, and what they need to do next. Ask Chuck and Winkler anything. We'll wrap up the 9 o'clock hour. 105.7 FM, 1250 on the AM, and everywhere on the radio.com app.
We're not just going to go out there and run a bunch of plays. We want a system. We want to have a consistency within our offense so our guys get used to running the same types of plays so they can go out and execute and play fast. Because if you can go out there and try to eliminate the thinking that's involved and eliminate the gray for them where they can just go out and play fast and execute, I think you have a much better chance for success.
That's Matt LaFleur when he met the media a year ago to take the Titans offensive coordinator job, called plays for a year. They went 9-7, battled a lot of injuries, good enough for the Packers to be interested, and now he is the 15th head coach in franchise history. He will be introduced to the media today at 3 o'clock and to really everyone. We'll have that for you throughout the day on The Fan. Rob Reichel, Forbes.com, BobMcGinnFootball.com, He joins us now on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Rob, good morning.
Hi, Robbie.
Hi, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Oh, we're doing all right. You know, just a lot of Matt LaFleur stuff here we're talking about and trying to figure out this guy a little bit. And
you sound very enthused, Chuck.
Well, I am. We were talking about this this coaching hire, but it's you know, it's the number one story in the state. There's no doubt about it right now. And you know, I think there's just so much uncertainty and unknown about this guy. What have you been able to uncover and how the fit will be in Green Bay? First of all, how they came to, what did you learn of how they came to hire this guy to begin with?
Yeah, you know, Chuck, we'll obviously learn a lot more about that later today when Murphy and Gutekunst finally meet the media. You know, I was a little bit surprised, Chuck, that it went as quickly as it did. I was on the big show last week with those guys, and, you know, I kind of thought the end of this week maybe it would take, you know, they interviewed so many guys. They interviewed the 10, and, you know, it was LaFleur's only interview. Nobody else had any interest in interviewing him. And guys, we reported at BobMcGinnFootball.com that his job was in real danger in Tennessee, that Mike Vrabel was leaning toward not bringing him back as badly as things went for Tennessee last year, finishing 25th in total offense, 27th in scoring, 29th in passing. I mean, that it was not a good Tennessee offense. And guys, if you look at Tennessee, they do have some weapons. So that would be a real concern, I think, and a point of contention for some people out there. But LaFleur's obviously had success, guys, you know, through the years with RG3 to Matt Ryan to Jared Goff. You know, how much of that is him? How much is Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay or people like that? You know, none of us will ever fully have those answers. But, you know, he was the girl with the pretty smile, so to speak, that obviously took the heart of Gutekunst and Murphy in the one interview that he did, guys, and he wowed them enough in that interview. What exactly he said, what he showed them, what he proposed, what he brought out in the course of that interview, we're going to find out later today. I'm real interested to find out what it was that kind of made Murphy's heart skip a beat and jump all over this guy. Because he was not a guy that was in high demand across the league, guys, and you know, I think his future in Tennessee was definitely in some real doubt.
I'd be interested to know in that interview how much Aaron Rodgers' name came up, because I do think that if this is going to work, a lot of that depends on really Aaron Rodgers. He's getting called a coach killer. That might be a little too strong. He's only, you know, been under the one coach. Really, that he's played for a significant time with McCarthy, and that lasted 13 years. How much of the LaFleur era depends on Rodgers willing to be a student to him?
Oh, I think 95% of it, Bart, without question, and I'm sure his name and you know, his history and his track record dominated that interview. You know, I don't think Coach Killer is overly exaggerating things. I don't think that's necessarily an unfair label or an unfair tag. If Tom Parker at your station told you tomorrow to talk about the Bucks, and you went in and spent 4 hours talking about the Admirals, and you absolutely defied your bosses the way Aaron Rodgers did, and we're learning some of those details here over the last, you know, few weeks with a guy like Mercedes Lewis talking about just how, you know, we all knew that he changed.
Be careful here, because I did bring up soccer last segment, so I might be on thin ice already.
I mean, you get the analogy, though. It's
right.
Certainly, you know, it's certainly not what you want your model employee, your the most important piece of your company and your corporation to be doing. So LaFleur, obviously, that's job one, is to get on the same page with Aaron Rodgers. And I think Bart, he needs from day one to sit down with Rodgers and say, this is the offense. When I call a play, you're running it, and this is what we're doing. Not, hey, Aaron, what do you want to do? I think this needs to be a Matt LaFleur decision, and Rodgers, still as dynamic as he has been, guys, as good as he has been at that position, he is still the employee working for the corporation, not the other way around. Things have gotten out of control there in the last few years. And much like the end of the Favre Sherman regime, you know, back in the mid '00s, it's a real slippery slope. It's a dangerous situation. McCarthy came in, guys, in '06, and I give him a lot of credit. He got Brett Favre squared away. He got Favre's career back on track within 2 years. They were in an NFC Championship game in 2007. That's obviously job one now for Matt LaFleur, is to get on the same page with Rodgers, get him to be a model employee, get him to listen again the way he did early in his career when Mike McCarthy would tell him something to do and he would do it, not the other way around where Rodgers is going out on the field freelancing and thinking he's the offensive coordinator.
Do you think Rodgers fairly or unfairly gets credit for being a non-team player, that he's in it for himself and he's not going to listen to anybody? Do you think that's true when people say that to you?
Do I think that label is fair?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that he's necessarily in it just for himself, but he's not an easy guy to coach. He's not an easy guy to manage. He never has been, Chuck. Part of that bleeds into his greatness too, though, Chuck, because he's got a remarkably high IQ. He is typically, if not the smartest guy in the room, one of the smartest guys in the room. And then when things have to get dumbed down, I do understand his frustration. But, you know, he's not a great teammate. I mean, we've seen him for years show up, guys on the field, take shots at him through the press, never take a lot of the blame onto himself. It is absolutely opposite of the way Brett Favre handled things for so many years, you know, when he was throwing to really mediocre players such as Bill Schrader and some of those guys that he had to work with for all those years, and things wouldn't go well in a game, and Favre would go into a press conference and he'd put everything on himself. That's just really not the way Rodgers has worked. I don't think he's in this for himself, Chuck, but I don't think he's a great leader. I don't think he fully understands how to be a leader. He had to take classes on leadership in college to even have a clue, you know, how to become a leader and a respected guy inside a franchise, where a guy like Favre was 4, 5, 6 years old following Irv Favre on locker rooms for the next 15 years, when he was growing up. He kind of understood leadership a lot more than a guy like Aaron did. So I don't think it's necessarily malicious or anything like that from Rodgers, Chuck, but I do think he's a really hard guy to control, to manage, to get to kind of follow your way and your path and your plan, and that's going to be a real challenge, I think, Chuck, for LaFleur to, you know, there's only a 4-year age gap between these two guys. So for Rodgers to 100% buy in and to follow this guy now for the next 3 to 5 years is going to be a tricky thing. But they obviously need each other if Green Bay is going to get things turned around. So, you know, that's going to be a vital component of where they go from here.
We're asking about expectations next season to people today, and I think there's still a lot of, well, you got to see what happens next. You got to see who they draft. You got to see how free agency shakes out. Now that they've got the coach settled, what do you think is their next biggest area of concern? What's the biggest thing they've got to address now?
Boy, you better take your show till about noon or 2 o'clock. Guys,
I'd love to.
If we're going to go through the list of what this team needs, I mean, they clearly have to make some gains in free agency, guys. And they're going to have money to play with based on, you know, who they decide to move on from here. That's going to be a Gutekunst-LaFleur deal, I assume, here over the next 6 weeks or so before we get to free agency. You know, do you release a Nick Perry, a Brian Bulaga? I wouldn't expect Randall Cobb, for example, to be back. Do you release Jimmy Graham? You know, you're going to have a much clearer indicator, guys, of where they are roster-wise in, you know, 6 weeks as we get closer to free agency, because some of these guys have big bonuses due to them at the start of the new league year. So we'll see if they decide to pay some of those guys or not. My guess is on the majority of those guys, they won't, and they'll move on. So, I mean, Bart, they need help in, you know, 7 out of 9 areas or whatever, a positional groups on the team right now. They're outside of defensive line and running back. Bart, you could probably go anywhere, for example, in a draft and say that pick made sense. You could go anywhere in free agency and say, sure, they needed an outside linebacker, they needed a safety, or they needed a right tackle. They need those people. So I think the fans need to understand, Bart, this isn't going to happen by September. Maybe September of 2020, but it's not going to happen by September of 2019. This is going to be an ongoing process, and you know, I think Green Bay is probably behind 8 or 9 teams right now in the NFC. So they've got to make gains over the next couple of years and then hope to take advantage of the later years of Rodgers' contract.
All right. Well, I think that, you know, they do have so many holes. That's why I can't see them being a playoff team next year. You know, they got to have a super draft. They got to maybe hit on their free agents if they sign any, but I don't think that there's an urgency to get back to the postseason, and they realize that. And that's just, man, you know, like of all the holes that they got to fill, there's only a couple of positions set. And like you said, you know, you go around the draft there, and they could find a you could justify any position, maybe besides running back, where they would need somebody.
Yeah, without question, Chuck. I mean, I do still think, you know, they're the Green Bay Packers. They pack 80,000 people into that place. So when you say there might not be an urgency to get back to the playoffs, I don't think they're looking at it like that, Chuck. I do think there's an urgency from their perspective. I'm sure at the end of the season in December, when Murphy looked around that place and saw 10, 12, 15,000 empty seats at various times, certainly that Arizona game jumps to mind, and that is not good for business. So at the end of the day, the best, and Murphy's a businessman. I mean, let's be honest. He's a businessman first, and until proven otherwise, football is a distant second in terms of his strength. So as he looks around and sees a half, you know, a 20% empty stadium late in the season, guys, that's not a good thing. So I do think there's a real urgency level inside the organization. I mean, a two-year drought in Green Bay is really just too long the way things have gone the last quarter century. They don't want to take that to three. That's the last thing they want to do. We're looking back to the 80s when they've had three straight years now, guys, you know, where they missed the postseason. But it's going to be a remarkable challenge because, I mean, let's be honest, guys, that's probably one of the 8 or 10 worst rosters in football right now when you take the quarterback out of the mix. It's just not a very good roster. Inside the division, Chicago's leap years ahead of them. They're miles ahead, I think, right now. I think Minnesota's still ahead of them. Across the conference, there's another half a dozen teams, I think, that are ahead of Green Bay. So they've got to find a way to have a, you know, an epic type of a draft. A draft like the Colts just had last year where they find two all-pro players that the Saints had 2 years ago, you know, where they found the rookie of the year on offense and defense. That's probably unrealistic, but they need to have a draft, guys, close to that where, you know, they get five starters out of it by the 2020 season. And when Gutekunst goes back into free agency this time, guys, you know, he can't miss as many times as he did this past year, and he can't miss with his big signings like a Jimmy Graham or a Muhammad Wilkerson and things like that. He's really got to hit a couple of home runs, and that, you know, you can get things turned around pretty quickly inside that league. And if they can get Rodgers back on track, guys, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility they could make the playoffs in 2019, but it's not where I'd put my money, guys.
Rob Reichel, thank you for your time. Forbes.com, BobMcGinnFootball.com. We appreciate it, Rob.
All right, guys, enjoy the press conferences today.
Thanks, Robbie.
Can't wait. He joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Start your renovation journey with a simple and convenient pre-approval from Great Midwest Bank, dedicated to providing perfectly personalized home loans to those right here in our community since 1935. On the Packers positive meter on the green and gold Kool-Aid scale, if the show overall was leaning one way, Rob yanked it back the other way. Not too optimistic there, our friend Rob Reichel.
Yeah, I mean, he said that they have one of the, take Rodgers off the roster toward the end there. He said, takes Rodgers off the roster, they have one of the 8 worst teams in the NFL. Man, that says a lot. I might not be too far off on that, though. I mean, you'd have to agree that Rodgers means several wins, but man, 8 worst teams in the NFL, that'd be the Green Bay Packers.
Chuck and Winkler, you can ask us anything. Send in your questions at 105.7 FM The Fan. Use the hashtag AskCW. We'll get a couple in here coming up, and we may go into a little bit of an overtime today. Any question you have for us, you can win some Dane Cook tickets. Tweet us at 105.7 FM The Fan. That's next.
Do you have any questions?
You've been sending your questions in all morning for Chuck and Winkler, and now it's time for some answers.
Just answer the question, please.
This is Ask Chuck and Winkler Anything on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Ask Chuck and Winkler Anything. We do it every Wednesday at 8:45. Got to it a little late today, so we'll ask a few questions here on your behalf and spill into overtime, I think. You can tweet us at 105.7 FM The Fan. Use the hashtag AskCW. Cody Grant will be the host, the vessel for your questions. Chuck and I, anything is on the table. Go ahead, Cody.
Hey, Rhodes.
Let's start with Zach here. He wants to know, out of the 3 young pitchers the Giants are asking for to be included in the deal for Madison Bumgarner, Corbin Burns, Freddie Peralta, and Brandon Woodruff, Who of those three are you most okay with letting go?
I would be okay with Woodruff. I would not give up on Corbin Burns or trade him at all. Boy, he's the most highly thought of the three, at least I do. I think he is. So I would say Brandon Woodruff. I would, if they told me I could have Madison Bumgarner for next year for Brandon Woodruff, I would do it.
See, Woodruff came on, though, so strongly in the NLCS that I'm hesitant to even give him up.
Mm-hmm.
Burns, for sure. Burns could be a right-handed hater. I don't think he'll... I mean, Hader's great, but Burns could be that role. And then Woodruff was very good. I think Freddie, but Freddie could be very good, too. I almost want to say none of them. For 1 year of Bumgarner?
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Bumgarner, I mean, he's a terrific pitcher. He just got to stay healthy, and the injury history bothers me. I wouldn't give up the other two, but I would, if I would, I would give up Woodruff.
I guess I would answer.
It'd be tough to do. It'd be tough to do. I mean, maybe Woodruff gives you the season that Bumgarner gives you. Who knows?
But maybe.
Is there room for all three of those guys? Is there better? I mean, if you're going to get somebody, could you get somebody maybe who's under contract longer than Bumgarner?
That'll be interesting to see what Stearns does on that one. We know how much he loves young, controllable talent, and Bumgarner's a little older than those guys, and the controllable part is not really there. Cody.
Let's go to Matt. He wants to know which comes to Milwaukee first, an NHL team or an MLS team?
And we're going to take the moment here to officially ban any... We'll answer anything, so I don't know if that's fair, but... We ain't ever getting an NHL team. Am I wrong to say that?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, but although when
but we get a question for it every week.
When they put the NHL ice, when they built the Fiserv Forum and they put NHL ice in there, that was a little mysterious right there. So who knows what these owners
are
thinking.
That could be a wrinkle.
That's the one wrinkle, but I would think, I'm surprised we don't have an MLS team here.
I'm not. You would need 18,000. There'd be like 16 home games, 18,000 seat stadium. I don't know if we would fill that. Where would the sponsorship money come for MLS? Yes, there is a fan support. There's plenty of people that like soccer. You might go to a Wave game. You might go see a Torrent game. But who's going to those games?
There wouldn't be enough for an MLS team?
No.
Okay.
I do not think so. I don't think so.
All right.
There's a lot of good soccer support, but I don't know if... You know, we do such a good job during the World Cup of filling these bars, and our ratings are always good, but I don't know if there is support for a family of four to go watch a pro soccer game. I just don't know if that's there.
All right, so they would have to draw 18, you think? 18,000?
Yeah, and I don't know if the sponsorship money's there, because the sponsorship money in this town, you've got the Brewers, you've got the Bucks. To squeeze in a hockey team is going to be tough.
Yeah.
But you can either, I don't know, I don't. And MLS is structured so poorly, I just don't see it happening.
See, in the wintertime, I could see with Marquette and the NBA at time how it'd be tough to get an NHL team here and for that buck. But maybe in the summertime, I thought maybe with only the Brewers going on that you'd have a little extra. But where would you put the stadium, too?
Could you slap it next to Miller Park?
Would there be room? For 18,000?
Can you knock down that house that is hanging on for dear life on 70th?
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's on the right side when you come in east. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The little brick one.
Been there forever.
It's like, wow, who lives there?
Yeah.
Who lives in that house right before the cemetery? Right before you turn. Who lives in that house?
Well, before the Bradley Center was built and when County Stadium was more towards the north, they thought about putting the Bradley Center where Miller Park is right now.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
It would have been County Stadium and the Bradley Center, but then when County Stadium got knocked down, where were you going to put the new Miller Park? Downtown?
What do we get? Two questions this week?
A little bit more than that. That was two there, though.
But we've got plenty more, okay. So we'll keep this going in the 9 o'clock hour. We'll talk more of the Matt LaFleur situation, how much of a factor Aaron Rodgers is into this whole recipe as well. So keep getting your questions in at 105.7 FM, The Fan. It's Chuck and Winkler. Your chance at $1,000 coming up as well next.